All right, this is Not Half Bad, the Rutgers St. John's podcast. It is Sunday, January 19th at 11 a.m., so this is being recorded before Rutgers road game with Houston at 1.
Where they're going to win.
Or lose, probably lose. And I'm Dave, the Rutgers blogger from onthebanks.com. You can find me on Twitter at Dave_White.
And I'm Norman of Rumble in the Garden. You can find us at RumbleSBN on Twitter.
And here we go. This is, what number episode is this, Norman? You always know.
It's episode 13. And
yes, lucky 13.
Lucky number 13. And I think for both teams, there's a lot of, there's not a lot of luck for St. John's, at least. For Rutgers, you know, there seems to have been, you know, at least some improvement. And we'll talk a little bit about that. But first, we'll delve into the whatever you'd like to call it that is St. John's. You know, I don't like to use the word disaster. You know, there are real disasters out there in the world. But going 0-5 for a team that should have had real NCAA tournament aspirations is a real cause for questioning and concern.
Okay, so I just looked up some synonyms for disaster.
Okay.
All right, so you can call this a catastrophe.
Oh, that's not bad.
A calamity.
Like Jane. Mm-hmm.
A cataclysm.
Ooh.
A tragedy.
All right.
Or I like this one because they are Catholic school. An act of God.
Huh. But, see, I always thought that an act of God, and maybe it's, you know, just thinking of God as, you know, God as a force for good, you know, that's very Old Testament, don't you think? That an act of God is a flood and a lightning and locusts. Right. So that's New Testament, too. That's, yeah. You know, Revelations and all that, but.
Failure, fiasco, debacle.
Yeah. Many of these words do apply to St. John's.
So tell us about St. John's. What happened this week?
Well, so St. John's comes into the week 0-3 after their, you know.
In the conference. 0-3 in the conference.
Yeah, 0-3 in the conference, 9-6 on the season. And they had, you know, they had chances against Villanova, a team that's now number 2 in Ken Pom's rankings and top 10 in the nation. And that's, you know, that, and there's no real shame in losing to Villanova. There is some shame in going 0-3 when your team is supposedly the most talented in the conference. Mm. So, you know, there'd been a loss on the road to Xavier, a loss on the road to Georgetown, and then the loss at home to Villanova. But everybody realized that there was a 5-game stretch where St. John's could go 5-0 and get back in the swing of things. It was going to be a long shot, but they had a chance. They had a road game at DePaul on Tuesday night and a home game against Providence. And then a non-conference against Dartmouth on Saturday. And
it looked like a week where St. John's could maybe get itself untracked a little bit.
Yeah, you know, I mean, these are teams that, yeah, they're going to be competitive because the Big East has a lot of parity. But these are games that St. John's has won and should win if they're really, you know, coming together, if they're really that good, if they can really hang with Villanova and they can hang with Syracuse. But apparently losing is a habit. And St. John's went to DePaul and managed to do just enough to lose.
Oh.
I mean, it really was a just enough to lose kind of game. There was the weird flagrant foul that Sir Dominic Poynter committed. He got tangled up with Brandon Young somewhere in the middle of this, or early in the middle of the second half. And for some reason just decided to, you know, kind of mush him in the head and fling him over. You know, people say Young did an acting job, but there was a lot of force behind that push. Mm. That gave DePaul a possession and 2 shots, which they made. They won by 2 points. All I'm saying is that people say, well, they had a chance down the stretch. They blah, 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 the last play, etc. But, you know, when you give up.
I was going to say, the last play, I think the problem, well, I didn't know about the flagrant, but the last 3 minutes was a problem.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the last, coming down the stretch, I mean, they put themselves in a position where they needed to score, and for some reason they were playing God's Gift to Chua, who is known for, you know, questionable hands, a lot of effort, but not necessarily scoring, and Max Hooper, who has a real hard time getting open for shots. Along with D'Angelo Harrison and Orlando Sanchez, I think he was in there because he took that weird 3 at the end. Anyway, so you can talk about that, and you can talk about the last play where maybe guys weren't necessarily in the right space to let Rashid Jordan, you know, create at the end of the game, and that's fine. You know, that's a legitimate gripe. But again, you know, when you give a team an extra possession in a tight game, when you give them 2 extra free throws, that's the kind of thing that comes back to bite you. You can't make those mistakes. You can't. Mm-hmm. There's no reason to lose your cool.
You especially know, when you're juniors and seniors, you know, as we've harped on.
Yeah. I mean,
that'd be smarter.
I mean, there's no call for ever doing that on the court. So, you know, again, others have said and disagreed with me that, you know, that was a factor. But I do think that flagrant was just, you know, just a little microcosm of the season, finding the absolute wrong thing to do at the wrong time. And you know, there are other things we can say, too, about, you know, St. John's defense and their permissiveness, allowing DePaul to get quite a lot of shots at the rim. You can't do that with a team that's, you know, as athletic as St. John's and a defense that's supposed to be so stout. You've got to force those guys into jump shots. You can't let them continually get at the rim. You can't let them continually rebound the offensive end, which has been a real problem for St. John's.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, St. John's is recovering from this loss, and they have a quick turnaround. They play Providence. And this is a game that's also, you know, maybe kind of winnable. So they come out and give up a 16-2 run to open the game. I think it was about like 15. There were 15 minutes left on the clock in the first half, and the score was something like 14-2 or 16-2.
Oof. I didn't know that. I didn't start watching until the second half. Fun game. I got to admit, it was a fun game to watch when you're not a fan of either team.
Oh, yeah. It was. There was a lot of, well, kind of free-flowing offense.
Mm-hmm.
Bryce Cotton, you know, got to do his Bryce Cotton thing. And, you know, it is what it is. You know, St. John's had their chances. And
twice at the buzzer, right?
And then there's that. You know, St. John's had their chances. They fought back. They got the game tied. They played a lot better in the second half on offense. And they just... The end of game plays, St. John's had three chances really to win. They had a chance at the end of regulation, a chance at the end of the first overtime, a chance at the end of the second overtime, right? They had the ball in each possession. At the end of the first overtime, they ran this play that was an isolation, well, actually it was a pick and roll for D'Angelo Harrison, and he starts at the half court line, just waiting, you know, watching the clock go down, you know. Not necessarily the decision that everybody would make, but you kind of understand. And they run a pick and roll with Orlando Sanchez, but the ball ends up in Sanchez's hands, and he takes, you know, a brick three. You know, he can shoot, but he's shooting something on the order of like 20-something percent on the season, 22% from the three. It's just one of those things where it's like, I'm pretty sure you could find a better shot than that, you know, with a better shooter than that.
Right, I mean, it's not the shot you wanted.
And especially when you're tied, I don't know. Maybe there's some better actions that you can run or something, you know. At the end of the first overtime, they give the ball back to D'Angelo Harrison also to create this one just a pure isolation. But he loses the ball, gets it back, and then throws up a wild shot that hits the side of the backboard. And, you know, after watching St. John's battle back in the second half of the game, and then watching them at the beginning of the second overtime where they rattled off 4 points, just aggressive and attacking and forceful, it was weird to see them back in this possession.
Both overtimes, I really thought, as I was tweeting at you, I really thought St. John's had it. Once the overtimes started, I thought Providence got in the habit of taking some really bad shots, and it looked like St. John's was aggressive and going to the hoop and you know, ran off four point leads in both overtimes.
Yeah, I think so.
And then they just eased off the gas. It was very strange.
It was hard to understand. And so at the end of the third, or the end of the second overtime, Jakar Sampson was out because apparently he was cramping up, and Max Hooper was in. And St. John's has, I think they have, did they have the lead or were they tied? I can't remember. But, you know, they're in possession. They basically... I think they must
tied.
Have been. Were they tied when Max Hooper got tied up?
Yeah, it was tied because that's what that's when Cotton took the lead, right?
Yeah, no, I think they were up one. They were up 1 point.
Oh, okay, yeah. Sorry.
So they're up 1 point and they're inbounding the ball. There's like, you know, 20-something seconds left, and all they really have to do is inbound the ball and get Providence to foul them or advance the ball, something like that, right?
Yeah.
So they inbound the ball underneath, you know, the basket. The basket that that they're defending, and you know, Max Hooper gets the ball, doesn't advance at all, just kind of stands there, and two guys come over and wrap him up, and they get the jump ball, and it's Providence possession. How do you not know it's Providence's arrow?
Right.
How do you not discuss this coming out of a timeout? They had a timeout. They came out of a timeout. How do you not know this?
How do you get tied up?
How do you get tied up? Yeah, you got to make some kind of move. They will give you the foul, but you can't just stand there. You got to be like, oh, I'm dribbling. He's stopping me. You got to do something. You got to throw your hands in the air and go like, oh, he hit my face, sir. Oh, you get that call, but you can't just stand there.
Right.
Not a honey basketball move.
No. Lavin said he wanted Hooper in there, didn't he, after the game?
He said that Hooper was in there because of Samson's cramping up. But, you know, Hooper's another guy who hasn't played a lot at the end of games. Why not Rashid Jordan? Why not Jamal Branch? Why not anyone
else? Branch played much this year at all? I never hear his name mentioned.
That's another thing to discuss, but that's...
Oh, sorry.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's a legitimate question. I think people have asked about, you know, Jamal Branch. And I do think that on a certain level, he is at times a little passive with the ball. But he's also been very good at creating shots for others. And sometimes he does seem to have a good sense of breaking teams down and getting his teammates shots at the rim. But he doesn't really play much in second halves.
Mm.
Lavin's been going with Green or Rashid Jordan instead.
Yeah. Hmm. It's tough.
It's tough.
So they're 0-5 in the Big East.
They're 0-5 in the Big East. Yes, they won at Dartmouth.
They're at Dartmouth? No. Dartmouth came to Queens.
Yeah, Dartmouth came to Carneseca last night. So they won against Dartmouth. Great. You know, fine. But yeah, they're 0-5 in the Big East. They've got Seton Hall and Butler coming up. Seton Hall at Madison Square Garden and Butler in Indianapolis.
Yeah, that Seton Hall game all of a sudden, for all my trash talk, is a little scary after yesterday.
It's a lot scary. How much did they beat Georgetown by?
10. On the road.
Yeah.
And it just, I mean, they came back. They were down. I watched that game. They were down 7 a lot. And then all of a sudden, Georgetown went cold. I don't know if it was Seton Hall defense or just Georgetown being cold.
Yeah.
But Seton Hall wanted that game, and they got it.
That's pretty impressive. It looks like they started off a little slow and then got hot at the end.
Yeah, that's it. I think the last 10 minutes they were on fire, Seton Hall.
Well, good for them. I guess somebody from the area has to shine a little bit.
Like, yeah.
It's a little worrisome, as an aside, how much the Big East is not really shining in league play. And I think, you know, a lot of it, again, I've talked about this before, that there is a lot of parity in the league, and that's going to be a real, real problem going forward and trying to get teams in the NCAAs. I'm going to predict 3. And I think I'd said this before, too. Yeah, just because, I mean, if Marquette and Georgetown aren't showing out, and right now they're both Marquette's 2-3 in the conference, Georgetown's 3-3, neither of them have great wins.
Right.
You know, one of them is going to have to make a run in the tournament or, you know, really get on track sometime soon to get a legit at-large bid. You know, Villanova and Creighton will be there. I think they'll be good.
Yeah.
And, you know, Xavier might be on the edge, but...
Providence with a big win last night, too, huh?
Yeah, whooping up on Creighton.
Wow. Was it at Providence? Do you know?
I think it was at Providence, yeah.
Okay.
And
you're right. Lots of parity.
Lots of parity. And, I mean, that's to be expected. I think each one of these teams have enough flaws and have enough talent that, you know, they can, you know, fall at any time. As my buddy told me, you know, he said, well, look, they, you know, Creighton couldn't hit anything and Providence couldn't miss. And that's just how the game went.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And that's going to happen. And, you know, that's what's going to happen with St. John's. At some point, everybody gets one, you know.
You say that. But right now, like the mindset around
St. John's.
Well,
that's what I was going to say.
It's hard to look at this team and think, this is a team that's going to rattle off a bunch of wins, you know?
I don't think they're going to rattle off a bunch. But if they get one in conference soon, it helps with confidence. But if they lose to Seton Hall, then any time they get down, it's going to get in their heads.
Mm-hmm.
They'll pull a win. If they lose to Seton Hall, then they're going to be like a three. How many games do they play? 16, 18?
18.
Yeah, so 3-15, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah. Well, I'll give you some quotes from Jakarr Sampson after the game. Just on the last few weeks. No, nothing bad this time.
Okay.
No, nothing like that. No, he's talking about how our team comes from places where we weren't used to losing because we were used to winning. Losing five straight is always hard. You get into a dark place. We have to keep our heads high, keep to the system, and just do what we do best. I feel like any team is great good preparation. Whenever you get a win with how we've been struggling, it's always a good thing. When you lose so many games, it just seems like nothing's going your way. Calls aren't going your way. The ball isn't staying in the hoop, and shots you always make, you're missing. You're mad. You're frustrated. A win like this is always big. It doesn't matter how good the team is or how bad the team is.
Hmm.
Thoughts?
I don't know. I mean, it's something you say. Getting a win is good, you know, doesn't matter, blah, blah, blah. But they need a real win.
They do need a real win.
Dartmouth, hey, that's nice.
Dartmouth's the bottom of the Ivy League.
Yeah.
Bottom of the Ivy League, you know? It's
they don't have scholarships.
And, you know, that makes you less of a basketball player without a scholarship.
That's right.
Yes. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, Phil Green was saying that he was in an aggressive mindset because the team's better when we're aggressive. We can't play tentative. We have to play our game. You know,
that's nice, but why then? What's been going on? Why haven't you been aggressive for the past five games?
Why haven't you played your game? And what is the game? That's the other question. You know, what is this team's identity?
Yeah,
no one knows.
I don't know. But, they're better when they press and run. They've been better when they've pressed and run for 2 years now.
Well, at least we think they are. You know, it's hard to know because they haven't done it consistently.
Yeah. I don't understand that. I don't understand why they don't just force the tempo. We had this conversation last year, too. Why not just force the tempo from the beginning? He saved that last year, that press, until he was down, mm-hmm. and they used it to get a bunch of wins. Start from the beginning. It gets your team up. You know, you're not going to come out flat, or you shouldn't come out flat. You know, and it's aggressive. It's attack mode, and why not do it? Mm-hmm. You need to change something.
I will say that one thing that's very interesting about this year's squad – I'll backtrack to how Lavinov has often said that he wants to create offense from his defense. Like he wants to focus on the defensive side first, right?
Right.
So you'd expect, you know, with the shot blockers and with all this talent supposedly, you know, put to the service of being defensive, that they would actually be good on defense. This year, they are not good on defense at all. And this is a real issue. A couple of numbers in terms of allowing defensive rebounds or allowing offensive rebounds from opponents, they are at the bottom of the league, allowing opponents to rebound about 39% of their missed shots.
Holy smokes!
That's Rutgers
bad.
Yeah, that's
Rutgers out of conference bad.
Yeah. I mean, St. John's probably hasn't been this bad since, 2 years ago when mm-hmm. they just couldn't keep any team from getting second shots in that 13-19 season where a lot of these guys, including Mo Harkless when he was there, were all freshmen. That's really bad.
Yeah.
I mean, if you watch the DePaul game, you watched a team that just outfought St. John's for rebounds. It wasn't even about positioning. It was about guys having the awareness and the wherewithal to go, oh, I'm going to chase that ball. And St. John's just kind of standing there, sometimes in bunches of twos and threes, just going, oh, where's that ball going, you know?
I don't get it.
It's weird. I mean, I was having a discussion with a couple of people, including John Templon of NY Buckets, who will be doing a piece, I think, on something relating to this. And he was looking at lineups and lineup effectiveness, and he noted that the lineups with Orlando Sanchez and Chris Obekpa were particularly poor on defense. And one of the things you see when the two of them are together on the court is that they'll both go for the blocked shot, often on the same guy, in the same position. So you see, two tall guys leaping, and then there's somebody waiting on the weak side.
Waiting
for the shot to be missed, taking that shot and going, oh, thank you, you know?
Yeah.
Tip in.
Just find your bot. If somebody's going up for a shot and you want to block it, fine, but somebody else has got to find a man.
And that's, that's got conversation, that's coordination. And maybe one guy has to be like, well, when we're on the court, I'm blocking the shots. And when you're on the court, you're playing, position defense. Or maybe, just maybe, One should, both guys should play position defense and just have your hands up instead of worrying about swatting the shot. Block shots are great. They end up in the stat book. They make you look really impressive.
Right.
But maybe sometimes it's good just to restrict the other team from scoring.
Yeah. Was that the St. John's game where the color commentator, all he kept talking about was, if you're St. John's, you got to put a body on a player. The Providence game, was that it?
I don't know, because I saw... No, I did see the Providence game, so maybe it was the DePaul game, which I haven't seen all of yet.
I haven't seen the DePaul game, so...
Yeah, I need to go back and rewatch it.
Why? You don't like your eyes?
Yeah, I know. Well, because I saw it live, and that's a very different perspective underneath the basket.
Oh, you were there.
From the media section, yeah. I mean, it's like a 12-minute drive from home on a good day.
Oh, okay.
So it's... I feel like I need to rewatch it. Just, you know, struggle through it, stay up late at night crying, I don't know. But I mean, overall, like, the defense has been extremely porous. And, in fact, in Big East play, and including Dartmouth, I guess the 2014 games, well, no, that's the 2014 games and the last game of 2013, St. John's has been particularly bad on defense. They're allowing 1.06 points per possession to opponents in each game. That's just crap. I think in Big East play, it's something like 1.09, yeah, which is a far cry from what they did last year, where they were holding teams under a point per possession, which made them relatively competent. And that's a real problem, because if this team has any kind of identity, it's defensive, and that identity isn't there. So... You know, you got to throw your hands up in the air, because this offense isn't going to get better.
No.
Not with these concepts. Not with the mid-range jump shots.
Yeah. I just don't understand why it doesn't click, because they look good. When they're going to the basket, they look good and it works.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't understand why they'll do it for 2-3 possessions and then they'll get away from it. And it's not even like they're taking threes.
Yeah, well, I mean, well, here are two problems. One, if you're tracking how well they're doing on offense and they look good, check and see whether that offense is first early offense and second whether they're playing against a zone. When they're playing against the zone, they just kind of, you know, they waste time, they do their weave, and they don't, you know, you can hear the announcers talking about how you've got to get a guy in the middle, right by the Big East, get him a touch, you know,
yeah.
To make that defense move.
Find the seams,
and they don't really find the seams.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know what to say. It's just, it's got to be frustrating if you're a St. John's fan.
Yeah, I mean, there's a reason that a lot of St. John's fans are calling for Steve Lavin's head, you know, and I don't know that that's necessarily the answer of the problems with the players, or if that's even a realistic idea. That, you know, it's a little crazy. You know, Lavin's been there for 4 years. He recruited a great class.
Uh-huh.
But, man, this is not working right now.
Yeah. What's his contract?
I think he's signed until 2016, I want to say.
Okay. And how much does he make? Do you know off the top of your head?
Let's say the 1.6, 1.7, 1.8 mil area.
Oh, wow. Okay, so that's a tough buyout.
Yeah, I mean, he's making... That's what I remember. I think he's making pretty good money, and his assistants are making good money, too. So, you know. That is a significant issue. But, you know, how do you deal with a team that isn't going to be any different next year? You know, depending on if players decide to go pro or transfer. Not that any of them should go pro.
Just about to say, who's going pro?
Yeah, I know. People get all sorts of ideas.
Yeah. Yeah. And we talked about your recruiting. What recruiting at the moment?
What recruiting? The recruiting has been crickets and dust balls.
Yeah. So
yeah, it's I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, it's interesting. We'll see. You know, sometimes even not this year, but last year, Lavin pulled a few out of the hat. You know, getting in on a couple of guys late, bringing in the Orlando Sanchez, Felix Balamu, and Chris Obekpa, who he got really late in that year.
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah,
he'll find somebody, but. They should start that Kadeem player again. That really worked the last time.
Hey, the dude's a tough player. I don't have a problem with starting walk-ons or even playing walk-ons. I think DePaul has found some success with a couple of walk-ons that they need, with Edwin McGee and Peter Rickbosch, who both, I think, play pretty hard. They do their thing.
Well, they're my sleeper team, so of course.
Of course they are. they've been good. Yeah. They've been competent. Well, let's talk Rutgers. So that's enough about this.
Let's talk Rutgers. Everybody take a deep breath. And we can talk Rutgers for
everybody, go find your punching bag, or the St. John's fans, go find your punching bag, punch it hard a few times. I'm going to use this bed over here. Wait, I'm going to bring the microphone over. Ready?
All right.
Did you hear that? Yeah, that I was did. Punching. Okay.
All right, so Rutgers. Hey, yes. We won. Rutgers got a win.
Woo!
2-2 in the AAC.
Nice. And against UCF. This sounds like a WWF to me, you know.
Doesn't it? Yeah. Doesn't it? Yeah, beat Central Florida. It was the Scarlet Knights versus the Knights. So,
they're not the Golden Knights or the Black Knights or something?
I think they're just the Knights.
Oh.
They got no color. They really in their color. Name. What are they? Golden Black, something like that. But
Knights versus Knights. So it was kind of like Game of Thrones, right?
Kind of.
There was a nice joust.
No beheadings. Yeah. But
which one was the Knight of Flowers, and which one was the mountain?
Yeah, I don't.
Oh, did I just go past your? Are you not watching the Game of Thrones?
You're a little further than I gave up.
Oh, did you? They
spoiled the Red Wedding for me, and I just didn't care halfway through the third season.
Have you read the books?
I read the first book.
Dude.
I know.
Go back, read the books, watch the show. It's good.
I know.
It's worth your time. Fantastic.
All right.
Execution of the Red Wedding was amazing. Anyway.
Yeah. Anyway, sorry.
We're leaving that in, by the way.
It's funny about that show, too, because somebody spoiled what happened to Ned Stark for me.
Mm-hmm.
And that actually got me more interested in reading the books and watching the show.
Mm-hmm.
So I did. But then when the Red Wedding was spoiled for me, it turned me off.
I do wonder whether the Red Wedding will turn viewers off of the show. Because even when you're reading the book... And I'm sorry, people, if you haven't read it and you haven't watched it. Look, it happened a long time ago, so I'm sorry that I'm spoiling it for you.
Yeah.
But when you read The Red Wedding, there's a point, like, a little bit afterwards where you're like, do I need to read the rest of this? This is actually just now the most depressing thing I've read in forever. There's no hope here.
Yeah.
And then when you get, like, later on, you're like, seriously? Can I have some kind of hope? Is there something I can cheer for?
Oh, boy. Yeah,
but
no.
I think it's well executed and very interesting. At least through book four. Book five has a lot of interesting stuff, but then you're like, you better come around and resolve this, buddy.
Yeah, the only reason I complain about spoilers is because the Red Wedding was literally ruined for me 13 seconds after it happened.
Oh, that's not cool. And that's so sad, because I think the people who are real fans of the show and fans of the books, I thought the people were very good and respectful about the... Oh, that thing is happening. You know, they knew it was coming.
Yeah.
And when
it
happened, it was like, that thing happened. And they waited at least like, you know, 3-4 days before they started saying, oh, my God.
Yeah. Somebody had such a reaction. And it wasn't Twitter. It was Facebook. Had such a reaction that they literally just wrote out the script as their status with a couple of oh, my gods in there. So
that's not cool.
Yeah. But anyway, Rutgers, now that we just completely got off track.
Read Game of Thrones.
Yeah. It was an interesting game. It was a really fun game to watch. Rutgers is really I mean, it doesn't look that like UCF is all that good.
They're not.
This year. And I think they left their second best player home. I don't know. I heard that somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
But their best player, Isaiah Sykes, went off. Scored 29 points, 8 rebounds, 2 assists, 4 turnovers. You know, he's apparently not a good free throw shooter, but as what happens to Rutgers all the time, everybody makes their free throws against Rutgers. So he was 12 for 17 from the line, you know. So he was on, and he kind of kept UCF hanging around. But Jerome Seegers, Junior Itu, and Miles Mack just played their butts off. Jerome and Itu in the first half. Miles Mack came in 4 points away from 1,000 for his career. And it was, that was the storyline of the game. If you read all the articles, that's what everybody was talking about. And you could see in the first half, it was in Mac's head. He was taking bad shots. He was just trying to get it over with. And, you know, Seegers came off the bench, shot 3 for 4 from the, from 3-point range, scored 18 points in the game.
Wow.
Yeah. Seegers. He looked really good. 4 assists, only 1 turnover in 29 minutes. E2, 14 points, 6 rebounds, 37 minutes, you know, played a huge game. And then, so I believe it was, I have to look now. Hold on a sec. First, Rutgers was up 9 at halftime, 35-26. Mm-hmm. And they came out and pushed the lead to 16. And Miles Mack played probably one of the best halves I've seen as a Rutgers player. Scored 21 points in the second. He got his 4 points in the first half, and he got to 1,000.
Okay.
They announced it at halftime, and they came back out, and Mac just went off. 25 points total, 8 assists, no turnovers, 2 steals.
Ooh.
Probably one of the best halves I've seen since Quincy Doobie was at Rutgers by a player.
That's awesome. I'm really happy for Miles Mac.
Yeah, he was just – and he, you know – he was playing point guard, but he was playing scoring point guard. He'd drive the lane, and they'd collapse on him, and he found because UCF battled back. They got it to within 4 with about 6 minutes to go. And every time UCF swung a punch, Mac would hit a 3 or he'd find somebody open in the lane. And at one point, I think it was a 7-point game, Mac drove the lane. The defense collapsed on him, and he found J.J. Moore open on the wing for a wide-open 3. It was a beautiful assist. Mm-hmm. And it was just that kind of game, especially because Kadeem Jack was in major foul trouble, played only 8 minutes.
8 minutes, yeah.
And fouled out. And Wally Judge played most of the second half with 4 fouls. So there was a lot of foul trouble, and it was something that could really hurt them, it seemed like. It seemed like when it got down to 4, it got real nerve-wracking, but you know, Seegers, Mackey, and Itu really stepped up and did what they should, and or what they could, I should say, not what they should, because I don't think you can expect those kind of games every game.
So let me ask you a couple of questions specifically about this game.
Sure.
First, J.J. Moore seemed to be. I'm looking at the box score, and seems like he was judicious with his shot taking. What's up with that?
Yeah, he.
He only played 15 minutes.
Yeah, he came out and got 2 quick fouls real quick. They assigned him to guard Sykes, and Sykes drove the lane on him twice. It was 2 fouls, and they sat him for a lot of the first half. But it seems like Eddie Jordan has figured out how to use Moore, which is basically, I'll let you play, but as soon as you take a bad shot, even if you hit it, I'm sitting you. And so that happens like once a half. He takes a bad shot. Jordan sits him for a couple minutes. He comes back in and he plays really well. So it seems like he's kind of found that niche, and he's been smarter. He's found ways to get himself open on the wing. He's been cutting. The backdoor cuts have helped him. So he's looked a lot better.
Excellent. Okay, yeah. And then the other question is, how is Junior E2 coming along? And also, has Miles Mack found that balance between the scoring and the passing? I haven't really seen him this year, you know, that's always a concern about him and his game, because he's always been an undersized shooter who really needs to figure out how to play point guard.
Well, we'll start with Mack, because he had such a huge game. And if that game was any indication, he's starting to figure it out more. Starting to figure out when to give up the ball. He's done a really good job of drawing defenders to him, an extra help defender, and other players reacting to that and cutting backdoor cuts, and he can get the ball to him. So there's a lot more movement. He's not 100% of the way there, but there's a major improvement. He still jacks up. You know, he and Seegers still like to chuck up a 3 from the block R every once in a while, but they're really starting to gel the team, and you know, 8 assists with 25 points and no turnovers. He's starting to look around.
Nice.
Yeah. And E2 as well. E2, Jordan made a point of saying that E2's never guarded a 3 throughout high school, anything like that. And Jordan's been starting him at the 3, And his defense, that's why he played 30, well, because of foul trouble, too. He played 37 minutes, and where's the foul? Only one foul. And he was defending threes. He was he scored 14 points. Most of it layups. You know, cutting to the basket. He's got a nice little up and under move that he's starting to develop.
Nice.
And he hit a 3-pointer, which apparently he has that range. So he's getting there too. He's been really impressive.
That's awesome, and it's good to hear that he's defending. It must be his maturity since he's like 30, right?
Well, yeah, but, you know, he has the eligibility. You saw Necessary Roughness.
I know how well Sinbad played. I remember Scott Bakula's headiness.
That's right. So, but, yeah, he's really kind of fine. Apparently he had a real tough adjustment to college and stuff. Mm-hmm. They keep talking about that, but he's finding his niche now, and he's a lot more comfortable.
Wait, you mean Scott Bakula's character? Oh, you mean Junior E2.
Yeah.
You know, when he walked through the halls and everybody was like, oh, your son must be down the hall.
Yeah,
He's a new starting quarterback.
Who was it? Kathy Ireland was the kicker?
Yes, yes.
Yes, that's right. That's right.
Welcome to football.
But yeah, a good game for Rutgers. Really good game. Yeah.
Sorry.
It's all right. And they have an interesting week this week.
Yeah, they've got Houston today.
They're on the road.
For both games. That's cool. So I guess they get to stay in Texas.
Yeah, and Houston, I think, is on their level.
Yeah.
So I don't know how to feel about this game because Houston did beat UConn, but they've been kind of struggling since, and they got destroyed by Louisville the other day by like 40.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And then SMU game is interesting because SMU is good, but they'll be playing their third game in 4 nights. They played yesterday. They're playing today. They're playing a makeup game against Hofstra.
Oh.
And then
why?
They have
did it get canceled because of snow?
Yeah, like ice or snowstorm back in December.
Oh.
So they're making that up today, tonight, I think. And then they're off tomorrow, and then they have Rutgers on Tuesday. So you'd think Rutgers would be the fresher team.
Yeah.
And
SMU just played at UCF on Saturday.
Yeah, so they've been traveling. They're, you know. So that's an interesting game.
Oh, that's fantastic! That's fascinating.
Yeah, I think you want to go 1-1 here on the road.
Mm-hmm.
If they win today, clearly you want to get greedy, but you don't want to, because if you go 0-2, you have UConn coming in on Saturday, and then you have a chance of being in a real slide.
Yeah.
So,
but then you get Temple again.
Yep, that's winnable. Mm-hmm. Hopefully. But you can't take any, as you know, you can't take any game for granted. So. Yeah. But there's a lot of improvement. The offense is becoming a lot of fun to watch, because they're running. There's more and more Princeton principles
mm-hmm.
in there. A lot of backdoor cuts, a lot of cuts, and then inside out passes to the 3-point shooters, and it's really starting to work. They're getting some open shots, and it's such a nice difference from what we saw in the first semester in the out-of-conference and what we saw under Mike Rice for 2 years, where he just wanted to get one player hot and hope that he could
just
ride him out. Yeah.
And that player's ability to create.
Right. So it's fun to watch. We'll see. I think they're going to keep getting better. I don't know what that'll mean for wins, but I'm a little more optimistic than I was after the Fairleigh Dickinson game.
Cool. So I guess, you know, this is a good time to bring up the listener question. Thank you, Scott, for your question. And I'll read it to you, and you can, you know, treat it however you'd like.
Yeah.
So the question, with poor non-conference results, what do we look for in judging the season a success for Rutgers? Do we aim for a winning record in the American Athletic Conference?
That's a tricky question because it's – I can see in my head this season just going so Rutgers, meaning it's the first time they finish over 500 in the league, you know, since they were in the Atlantic 10,
mm-hmm.
and they had such a terrible out of conference season that it still means nothing, that you're still in the CBI.
Mm-hmm.
I think you just gotta hope that, you know, you keep getting better and keep pushing forward, and you get as many wins as you can. I mean, they're fun to watch. Unless they win the AAC tournament, they're not going to the NCAAs. So if you can get a postseason bid, that's great. You know, if you can
more
get
games to play, yeah.
More games to play, more practice. The core is still going to be here next year as seniors. So I think you try to win as much as you can, and you hope you get any postseason, CBI, CIT, whatever, NIT. You know, you haven't seen that at Rutgers since 2006.
Mm-hmm.
So,
I mean, I think one of the problems that Rutgers will have, though, is that the AAC is such a wacky conference. And not wacky. That's the wrong word. I don't have a really good word for it. But the AAC is a conference with a lot of very good teams and a lot of kind of bad teams for a major conference, including Rutgers. I mean, you know, there are winnable games against Temple, UCF, Houston, and South Florida, but you kind of would have to sweep those to get to a winning record and then get to the NIT, because I believe you need a winning record to get into the NIT.
Yeah.
You know, it's really hard to say how you get to success without a couple of real surprise wins, because right now SMU, Connecticut, Louisville, Memphis, I think I count about 8 games against that level of team, and it's going to be hard to pull out a win against any of them.
I think that's why these next 2 games are so important, because it's been a long time since the RAC was really buzzing and rocking. And I think if Rutgers can put on a respectable showing these next 2 games, then they can sort of get the crowd that they need where they could pull an upset. Because that building used to be known for upsets. And it's happened here or there, and you think they'll get one. But I don't think they're good enough to be, you know, dominant at home. Yeah.
No.
So I think a winning record's tough to come by, but I think you just shoot for as many wins as you can and try and get a postseason tournament.
Yeah, I think this is one of the situations where a major conference team should really, you know, think long and hard about things like the CBI and the CIT, those kind of tournaments that you have to pay to play in.
Yeah.
I think it's worth it for this team. I think that there's a lot of growth that you can get out of it. You know, you can send Wally Judge and J.J. Moore out on a high note and, you know, integrate some of the younger guys.
And you can really kind of reward the kids that stuck around after all they've been through.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you got to remember these are still kids, and the Mike Rice stuff was – you read the articles, I think it really weighed on them, the ones that stuck around. So I think you find a way to reward them.
Yeah.
So – but that's where you are. You just, what can you say? I think you're going to know a lot more about this team by the end of the week.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we'll learn a lot about St. John's as well. They're playing Butler, who has played everybody tough and has had 4 overtime games already. But they finally won one yesterday, so they have their first league win.
Who'd they beat?
They beat Marquette.
Whoa. Okay.
Apparently, they scored a bunch of points in the overtime in that win. So that was a Yeah, that's kind of fascinating. And then St. John's also has a Seton Hall at home on Thursday, which will be, you know, it's one of those games that earlier in the year we would have said, oh, that's winnable. But I don't know. You know, St. John's needs to pull that out, needs to start getting on a winning streak just to get to the NIT. So
that'd almost be a nice win
against
St. John's.
At home against, in the garden, yeah.
Who's kind of coming off, you know, I'm a momentum believer, and, you know, they're going to kind of be coming in, flying high, believing in what they're doing. They're healthy again. That would be a nice win if St. John's could get it.
If they can, yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you for listening to the 13th episode of Not Half Bad, the podcast covering Rutgers and St. John's basketball. This has been Norman of Rumble in the Garden.
And this is Dave of OnTheBanks.com.
As always, we welcome your listener questions to NotHalfBadPod@gmail.com. Or you can find us on Facebook or on, not Half Bad. You can find Rumble in the Garden on Facebook. Or you can find us on Twitter and, you know, just shoot us questions for the next podcast. And we'll be happy to answer them. We should be back next week. Personally, my schedule is a little wonky, so we'll see. But we'll try to be back next week with another podcast. And again, thank you for listening, and have yourselves a good day.
Yeah, have a good one.